Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. A nice Saturday stakes-wise. We have those Rich Stallion Series stakes in New York today, rooting for our friend Roddy Valente in one of those. Nice stakes action down at Gulfstream. We're going to review some stakes from last night at Remington as they wrap their season. A little bit later in the program, Dale Day will join us, the announcer, handicapper out at Remington, and we'll recap some of those stakes, including the Springboard Mile from last night out in Remington Way. But we'll kick things off taking a look at the Gulfstream Stakes. Our friend Acacia Courtney joins us. Acacia, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Very good. Happy to have you on board. And we were talking before we went on the air, but alert folks, otherwise, we always like to check in with you and Ron and this year Brian as well and get a little envy weather forecast. As I told you off the air, it's starting to snow here, but what are you looking at for the afternoon down there in Florida weather-wise?
Well, as my colleague Ron Nicoletti would say, and I know you've heard before, it's a beautiful day in South Florida. it was a little more cloudy today, but still really warm temperatures. Great day for racing. We have 11 races on the card today, 5 stakes, 4 of them graded, and you know a lot of these races and some of the maiden specials that we have as well will be previews for Pegasus Day in the Pegasus races, dirt turf, and now the new filly and mare turf as well.
Yeah, and as this is a Pegasus prep day, I'll ask you if the buzz and the excitement is already starting, because I cross my fingers, I'm knocking wood here and everything, but I think as horse racing fans, we are all looking forward to and hoping it all holds together, but a matchup of Life is Good and Nick's Go sounds really good.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, two incredibly talented horses, the Breeders' Cup Classic winner and Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner. But the thing about them is that they both have early speed, too. And I think that for both of them, the 9-furlong configuration at Gulfstream suits them well. And it's just really like a battle of the heavyweights in that matchup that we dream of as racing fans. So it'll be a really fun race to watch. But just as a fan, too, not even, you know, kind of taking a step back of working at Gulfstream and appreciating how awesome it is to potentially have the chance to see these two incredibly talented horses throw it down on the racetrack, and just so much respect for both of them. I'm really excited about that. I got to go to Palm Beach Downs last week and see Life is Good, and I've seen him on the racetrack in person, but kind of being up close to him and feeding him a peppermint in the stall and everything, it was really, really cool. And he has a great personality and just physically without flaws, really. Like, one of the most beautiful horses I've seen on the track. And Todd Fletcher also has Colonel Liam there at Palm Beach Downs looking to defend his title in the Pegasus Turf Race.
Yeah, as I say, fingers crossed that that holds up, because as you noted, it's not only two great horses, but it's two great horses with a really similar front-end style. How will it play out? Who will wind up victorious? Looking forward to that. And as I say, fingers crossed it all holds up. All right. As this is a Pegasus prep, let's jump in and kick things off. We'll kind of go in chronological order. The Suwannee River this afternoon, grade three event. And I pulled up your picks from the website. And if people go to the Gulfstream Park website, all the handicappers down there have nice printable sheets. And so I pulled up some replays that are related to your picks. And in this one, I pulled up the stakes race from the fairgrounds back on November 25th. The winner will be Breeze Rider, the number 8 horse, but Alms, the number 6, a close-up second. And I saw you liked Alms a little bit in the Suwannee River today. Michael Stidham, Luis Saez. I thought In a Hurry from Shug McGahee was intriguing in here as well. I've always liked Sweet Melania from Todd Pletcher. But again, talk a little bit about your thoughts on the Suwannee River.
Yeah, I think Shifty She is going to be the favorite as she comes out of a win in the Noble Damsel, and the connection, Safi Joseph Jr. and the owners have said that this is a prep for the Pegasus Filly and Mare turf race, and she has a lot of early speed. I think she's the horse to beat. I am trying to be a little cute and go against her with Alms. I think Alms will be a better price. I thought that she ran a really good race last time out. She didn't have the best start in that race, which is a little deceiving from short comments, but if you watch the replay, she did kind of plant a little bit at the break, broke out a little bit, but she was able to get into good position and was really trying hard outside Breeze Rider, who came back to win again after that. So she was beaten by a nice horse, and that was only her second start after roughly 18-year-and-a-half layoff, so to speak. And I feel like she's one that's rounding into form. And the horses that Mike Stidham has opted to send her to Gulfstream have been really well meant. So I think Shifty She, the one to beat, I respect In a Hurry as well, but I thought I could get a little bit of value with Alms and Louis Zayas Ford.
All right, very interesting. We turn the page now to the Rampart, the one-turn mile for the fillies and mares, $100,000 up for grabs. And again, I pulled up a replay from the pick you mentioned on the sheet. And actually, I'm going back a couple of races. September 24th, this will be Dance D'Oro, the number two horse, winning on the front end. And I look at this field, and I don't think I'm going too far out on a limb. You're looking for a pace scenario in here. It just looks like Dance D'Oro is going to be the speed in this race and may just take him gate to wire. Dream Marie, if you're a buyer's person, Dream Marie has the buyer's edge, but I do think Dance D'Oro has the pace edge.
I agree. You read my mind. That was my thought process in this race. And I love Dream Marie. I've always been a big fan of this filly. She's been an overachiever right from the start. She's really been kind of the marquee horse for young trainer Matthew Williams. And I think that she's just as honest as they come. She's coming in off a little bit of a layoff. She hasn't raced since August. I agree, her last two races were really strong, and she's kept very good company. Though she doesn't win as often, I mean, you even look back in the Rampart last year where she was second to Latruska, who then went on that incredible tear that she had in 2021, the early part of it. So she has the class edge. Dance D'Oro last time, she really kind of sprinted away from the rest of the field and I think was used a little bit early and out of that major win two back. I think it took a little starch out of her, so it might have been a bounce race last time. So I'm looking for her to come back today. Edgar Zayas, unfortunately, he's been sidelined for the next few months, opting to go and have surgery for an injury that's been bothering him. So we wish him all the best. But Amise Jaramillo will climb aboard Dance D'Oro once again. And he's ridden this horse to victory before, too.
Yeah, as I say, it just looks like sometimes in a field you look and just pick out the horse that's going to go to the lead and not really be challenged. And that looks like the case for Dance D'Oro today. It's going to be fun to see how that does play out. Eighth race this afternoon, the Sugar Swirl Grade 3 event. $100,000 up for grabs, 6 furlongs the trip. Frank's Roquette is in here, very talented runner from Bill Mott. Center Isle comes off a couple of nice wins up in Kentucky. They paid $1.5 million. Larry Best certainly likes to spend some money, and this one may be living up to that, still early in the career. But I'm going to pull up a replay. You mentioned Bronx Beauty on the sheet. Bronx Beauty in this replay from Monmouth back in September is going to be the number two horse. That was the last race for this horse, so a little bit of a layoff since this early September race. But boy, this was a good-looking effort from Bronx Beauty and offers a little bit of value at 6-1 on the morning line. Your thoughts in the Sugar Swirl?
Well, I think that there's going to be a pretty honest pace in here. And to be honest with you, I think that Frank's Roquette is a really talented filly. Just don't know if I really trust her and if we've really seen her best efforts recently. I know that she was beaten by Belzawan and Club Car, who've been putting on shows for us in Kentucky in the division. But it just kind of felt like even that race up back at Colonial, she should have won that day. She wasn't aggressively handled at Oaklawn back in April in the carousel. And she's, again, faced some really nice horses. Just don't know if we've really seen her best lately coming into this race. If she wins, I would not be surprised at all. But with the presence of some pace in here, Spencer Isle among them, I thought that Bronx Beauty was going to get a great trip. And they took the blinkers off last time out at Monmouth. She ran a big race. She's raced 6 times here at Gulfstream. I think I've picked her like all of those 6 races. But in this race last year, she was second by a head behind Ladies Island, who was really dominant down in South Florida at that time. And this one will be running late, and I like to see that Tyler Gaglione takes him out for Anthony Margotta.
Yeah, we just, again, watched that effort at Monmouth, and that was a nice closing. Just steadily made some progress down the stretch, and that may be the game plan again this afternoon. We had Brian Addo on the handicapping show earlier, and we talked about the Harlan's Holiday, and I think we're all of the same mindset, it seems like. I'm going to pull up the Autumn Stakes from November 14th up at Woodbine. It is going to be number 8, Mighty Heart, getting it done. Always easy for us to root for Josie Carroll because when we make our visits up to Woodbine, she's always very accommodating as far as interviews and whatnot. This horse is fun, though, and maybe maybe a little bit underrated in the handicap division, in that most of the races are on the synthetic, won the Queen's Plate last year. But with the late start at Woodbine this year, seems like Josie Carroll had to pick some spots, and that winning the Blame at Churchill, I think, indicates Mighty Heart is going to be okay on the main track down at Gulfstream. And Fearless, yes, is very talented, but boy, the number thrown in that comeback effort doesn't inspire confidence. So I like the thoughts about Mighty Heart, but give us your opinion in the Harlan's Holiday.
No, I agree. I just couldn't get past Mighty Heart. He's the reigning Canadian Horse of the Year. It's really exciting to see him run down here at Gulfstream. I've been a fan of him, though I haven't ever had the opportunity to see him race in person. So I'm looking forward to it for Josie Carroll. John Velasquez is going to be aboard. I feel like Paco Lopez will be aggressive with Blue Sail, who's coming back off a relatively quick turnaround from the Claiming Crown. Their only chance, it seems, would be to try to go to the front. And because he is spotting a lot of class versus some of the others in here. So I'd imagine Don Velasquez will stalk or press with Mighty Heart. He'll be in a great forward position. He won the Prince of Wales on the dirt at Fort Erie, but I agree. I think that Blame win and the second at Mountaineer behind Sprawl as well in Grade 3 company, I think really shows that he's not just that kind of Woodbine synthetic lover. Fearless is a massive horse. He's a very, very big physical. So being drawn outside is a benefit for him. But I agree, he's run really well off the layoff before. And the fact that, to me, that last race was pretty disappointing, I just don't really trust him in here.
Yeah, if you buy the numbers, you know, the buyers are a tool in the toolbox for me. But, boy, that buyer last time, just a little anemic. And so I'm not sure what I hope he bounces back and runs well, but we will see this afternoon. Finally, stakes action winds up in the Fort Lauderdale. It's a mile and an eighth on the turf. And you're going to take a look on the sheet at La Empator for Chad Brown. Chad also has analyzed it in for locally based owner Bill Lawrence. That one's a little bit interesting. Space Traveler, very classy, but boy, stuck on the outside there. That's going to be a tough ask for that one. King Guillermo could be interesting at a price, given there's some back turf form that is okay. But again, we're going to take a look at a replay here. La Empator winning an allowance optional claimer at Aqueduct back on November 19th. Will be the number 5 horse here. Jose Ortiz was on board that day. John Velasquez slated to be on board today. Your thoughts in the Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah, I do think that Chad Brown holds a really strong hand in here. Analyze it, I think, will be a big part of the pace. It's probable, I thought at first looking at it, that he could potentially be the main pace setter. I do think that they'll be aggressive with King Guillermo, who you're absolutely right. He started out as a turf horse and was able to wire the field pretty impressively to break his maiden on grass. I thought L'Imperator was just the type of horse that's really come to hand this year. Maggie Wolfendale and I often share notes in New York, and I had been in the paddock for his first race in the U.S., which was August of 2020 in Saratoga, and then she texted me when she was in the paddock for August of 2021 in Saratoga, and we realized through our two notes that he was a completely different horse, just in the way that he was moving, the improvement that he was showing, just the gelding really seemed to help him, especially moving behind, which really can be the case for some horses that have some trouble behind. And I think that's really been a key for him coming back in 2021. And it's shown. I mean, his two races in Graded Stakes company weren't the best. The Bernard Baruch, he was up against it as Tell Your Daddy wired the field. And then Sacred Life in the Knickerbocker was really impressive, and L'Imperator was headstrong that day. So I think that he's in a good spot in here today, and hopefully John Velasquez will be able to help wrangle him a little bit. But again, I think Chad Brown holds a very strong hand in here.
It looks like a fun race and a fun afternoon stakes-wise. Again, kind of prepping for the upcoming Pegasus down the road as part of the championship meet, living up to its name. Casey, appreciate the comments. Before I let you go, I have to ask everybody down at Gulfstream this year, any hints for us handicapping the synthetic? That seems to be, it's fairly new, and it's a little bit of a puzzle, it seems like, for handicappers so far. I will say, last week, I have been touting maybe an angle for folks to watch, and last week, two horses lived up to it. I think there's always a limited number, but I think it'll be fun to see what the Woodbine shippers do on the synthetic this year. And as I say, two of them won last week, so I thought that was a good maybe barometer to watch those Woodbine horses.
No, I very much agree. Horses that have experience on synthetic, whether it's Woodbine, Presque Isle, other horses that have a synthetic track have been the ones I've been trying to watch, and also trainers. A guy like Steve Placeris, who has really, really strong numbers with horses maybe going to synthetic for the first time because he has run races at places like Presque Isle, for instance, and we've seen Steve being successful in a couple of the Tapita races so far. So I've been looking into pedigrees. I've been looking into trainer stats. If a horse has experience on the Tapita, whether it's here or up at Woodbine, another track, that's always intriguing for me. And we're also trying to figure out how the surface may be playing. The first couple weeks seemed like it was really favoring outside closers. Now it does seem like you can come from off of it, but they tend to come home pretty slow in comparison to some of the early parts of the fraction. So it's been a fun challenge, a fun handicapping challenge as well, but it's been an incredibly safe surface, and we haven't, knock on wood, had a lot of rain down here in Florida yet, but when we do, it'll be nice to be able to hold on to those strong field sizes with the Tapita option.
I totally agree, and I think it's a fun addition down there at the three different surfaces, which, as you say, I think will play into off-the-turf events very well when that happens. Hopefully it's seldom, but when it does happen. And yeah, it has been a handicapping puzzle, but I think as we get more of a database, everybody will kind of latch on sooner rather than later. Casey, I always appreciate the conversation. Good luck to you and everybody down there this afternoon. Have fun, and we'll talk again certainly before the meet ends.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Seth.
Appreciate it. Acacia Courtney from Gulfstream. And again, really nice card down there today. Kind of a Pegasus prep with really great stakes action. All right, I'm going to take a break, and then we'll have a little segment with some news and notes as coming up a little later on. Dale Day from Remington Park will review some of the stakes action at Remington last night, highlighted by that springboard mile. But again, take a break and some news and notes on the rebound. Stay tuned.
The best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku, try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Seth Mayer in the studio. Thanks for joining us. Oh, let me hit you with the promos once again, because we have two fun ones here at the Clubhouse Racebook today. At the Racebook today, there is the $100 Play the Board contest. And I said it earlier, and I've been saying it all week long as I've been touting this. If you haven't played, and I just play, in my position, I can't play and win prizes here as an employee. But I go out usually when we do this and fill out one of the sheets and shoot it out on Twitter and just kind of see how I did. There are five races at Aqueduct that each have a different kind of a bet you have to play. Win, play, show, exacta, there's a triple. There are five different bet types, and you have to fill out your ideas in each of those races for whatever the bet type is in that race. And then the person who does best at the end of the day, $75. Second best, $25. It's a fun contest. You have to kind of strategize a little bit, and that happens today here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Play the Board contest, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. And also today, it's a fan appreciation day with the first 75 folks through the door getting a $2 bet on Bustin Pietre, who will go in the New York Stallion Series a little bit later, owned by our own locally based owner, Roddy Valente. So we can all root for Roddy and have a couple of bucks on the horse as part of the Fan Appreciation Day here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Same spot that tomorrow there's an NFL Sunday. That happens every Sunday throughout the NFL season. You can watch all the football action and all the racing action on Sundays here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Last night I pulled up Equibase stats because it's always interesting the start of a meet to kind of get an idea of, you know, who do you key on. And as meets progress, sometimes the people who are hot early fade out, and another set, and particularly meets like this, Gulfstream and Oaklawn, and Oaklawn this year is right in there as a longer. I read a headline the other day that said, can Oaklawn still be considered a boutique meet? That's a great question because, you know, they essentially go right up to Derby Day. So, again, things may change. And who was it? Federico Villafranco, who to me is a trainer to watch down at Oaklawn. It seems like last year, maybe the last couple of years, he's a guy who got off to a slow start, but then middle of meters, he kind of picked up steam. Some guys are really aiming and they get off to great starts. But as I say, it's worth noting who gets off to a good start, maybe ride them for a while or take a closer look at them, at least until things start to change. And so at Gulfstream so far, no shock, Luis Saez on board as the leader at this point. 59 wins, Paco Lopez. 59 starts, 16 wins, Paco Lopez, 12 wins, Edgar Zayas, who again has gone to the sidelines now with, I think it's shoulder surgery, but he was sitting third. That will change, obviously. Tyler Gaffleon, fourth, and Junior Alvarado, fifth. So again, Luis Saez on top. We will see. Irad Ortiz, again, had the long suspension, the 30 days. He'll be back in January, I think, and he's been the guy the past couple of years anyway, and be interesting to see how fast he can, or if he can get back in the game. I would assume he might make it interesting, though. So that's Saez, Lopez, and again, Zayas is in there, but Gaffleon, so Saez, Paco Lopez, Tyler Gaffleon sitting atop the leaderboard on the jockey side. At Gulfstream. On the trainer side, Safi Joseph, and it will be interesting. Our colleague Brian Etto said earlier on the handicappers report, he thought Safi would win the title just because of the number of horses. But boy, that championship meet has been Todd Pletcher's for a while now. I'll be interested. But early in the meet, it is Safi Joseph. He's got 12 wins. Todd Pletcher with 6. Antonio Siano, 3. There's a number with 3 here. Eddie Plisa, George Delgado, D'Angelo, Barboza, Gustavo Delgado, they all have 3 tied for 3rd. But on top, Safi Joseph and Todd Pletcher. And again, I said, sometimes guys start off hot and then will slow down. So, you know, ride the wave while, you know, these two. It's maybe more Oaklawn than Gulfstream, because Safi Joseph and Todd Pletcher are going to be prominent throughout. So, but over at Oaklawn, and again, these tracks both started the same day. They both started December 3rd, so they've been going a couple of weeks now. On the jockey side at Oaklawn, and this is going to be interesting to see how it turns out. Joel Rosario, the game plan, I think, is still to head to Oaklawn. Going to be interesting to see how he does. But Florent Giroux is atop the standings right now with 10 wins. Francisco Arrieta and Ricardo Santana with 7 each. David Cabrera, 6. And Ramon Vasquez, 5 there. So Florent Giroux currently atop the standings. And as I say, it's going to be interesting to see how this one shakes out. And Santana, you know, it's been noted by a lot of people over the past few weeks, I wouldn't say a complete split with Steve Asmussen, but he's not riding as much as he was up until middle of fall. And then they were both on a little bit of a cold streak at Churchill. And subsequently, again, Santana was riding less for Asmussen. So we'll see. But he's sitting third, sitting tied for second in the standings at this point. So interesting to see how that will play out at Oaklawn. But that's the jockey standings. Trainer standings at Oaklawn. Brad Cox, Steve Asmussen, Robertina Diodoro, Norman Cash, and John Ortiz in the top five positions. And again, I said some of them get off to a hot start. You're looking more in that fourth, fifth, sixth spots, I think, for the guys who are maybe worth taking a look at early, and we'll see how they play out late. But the top three are probably going to continue that way as the meet progresses. Brad Cox, Asmussen, and Diodoro. Diodoro, with only the four wins, he takes a lot of action. Understandably, I like Diodoro down there. He plays the claiming game very well. The claiming game is hot down at Oaklawn. But with only the four wins, there have been some opportunities. And I admit I have jumped on some Diodoro horses that went up at short prices and were beaten. But at this point in the meet, this may be an angle that you look at it from the other direction. Diodoro early in the meet, he's getting some action. And, you know, 4 for 21, he's doing okay. But maybe you see a short price there, you feel a little more confident about, I can take a shot against until he starts to really heat up. So things to consider on the human side at Gulfstream in Oaklawn. We'll take a break. When we come back, Dale Day from Remington will recap some of last night's action and the season as a whole. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, we are joined now by Dale Day, the announcer, and also you can find his handicapping selections on the Remington Park website. Wanted to catch up with Dale and talk a little bit about the exclamation point on the season last night, highlighted by the Springboard Mile, and get some thoughts on the season overall. Dale, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you on board to talk a little Remington. Again, we featured it last night with the Springboard, which I think is a fun little late-season two-year-old race, has been for a few years now, and last night was no exception. We'll get to that in a few, but before that, wanted to just maybe get a little recap of the season. And I was actually, I listened to Jeremy Plonk's podcast last night, and he had recorded earlier in the week with you some season highlights, and I was interested, and I went and looked at Equibase. Part of the season highlight was the retirement of Welder, who was the all-time winningest horse at Remington Park, and I kind of looked it up. And, boy, this was a nice little Remington runner. 44 starts in the career, 27 wins, not all at Remington, but over $1.2 million. Talk a little bit about Welder and what he did this season to kind of wind things up.
Sure thing. Well, first of all, appreciate your featuring Remington Park last night, but touching on that real fast. We did, for us, we set a handle record.
Oh, nice.
It's not like it's Saratoga, where Saratoga does what we did last night, probably at half the card on a normal Friday. But But you get the idea. We topped 4 million last night in just handle on Remington Park, which Remington Park's been a featured late night track, especially for East Coast time zone, for a few years now. And it's worked out. We found our niche, and at night it's, you know, it's rough sometimes, not getting tons of sleep and having to wheel back and do something the next day for a big race card like yesterday. But it's a lot of fun when it works out with those stakes races. So we appreciate your featuring last night for sure. Welder was an interesting story. He always kind of showed talent, but they couldn't quite figure out how to harness it, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. But once they got him on the right plan and found the right jockey, and that jockey being David Cabrera, who's just a monster in this region of the country, things started to click. And by the time he got to age 4 and then age 5, he was just almost unstoppable, especially in Oklahoma bred company. But he could also win in open company races at Remington Park. He won the David Vance Stakes a couple times against top quality sprinters in an open company race on the undercard of the Oklahoma Derby, and ended up eventually rattling off 16 wins at Remington Park, and that set a new all-time record by any horse for most wins at the Oklahoma City track. So he's a really cool story. He was a really neat horse, and he overcame a lot because, interesting situation, his owner out of Claremore, Oklahoma, which is about a half hour or so north of Tulsa, he has his farm and his place up there and his own training track. He, at some point, decided he wanted his horses there at home and not at the racetrack. And so basically when they would come race time for Remington Park, his trainer, Terry Luniak, would load up whichever horse was going that night, or horses. It always benefited more if there was more than one. Put him on the trailer, make the two-hour-plus drive down the turnpike from just north of Tulsa to Oklahoma City, unload, tack, ready, run, you know, finish hopefully first. If not, whatever, you do what you got to do. Bathe the horse, walk him out, load him back up, and drive up another 2.5 hours. So there was a lot of wild nights, and Welder accepted that. He relished the fact that he got on that trailer. He knew it was all business, and he knew what was going on. And from what I was told, he didn't like to go to a track where he had to stay 2 or 3 days because their rules didn't accommodate just coming in and leaving. And it upset him. So he handled the trip, and he loved it. And it was a good trip. He picked up 16 wins, a great career, great story for an Oklahoma bred. And now they're trying to figure out how to make him a track pony, which I don't know how that's going to work, since every time he got on a trailer, he got too excited. He knew he was going to run. So we'll see how it goes. But he's a cool story. And for Oklahoma breds, he was the next one carrying the flag for the state breds here.
That would be great if they could make him a pony, because obviously, that, you know, over the years, we've seen some of these nice horses at the various venues who wind up getting that second career, and the fans still get a chance to see him. And after you mentioned it last night, as I was listening, I looked up the Equibase stats, and then I was looking on Twitter, and it seems like the horse, understandably, a fan favorite as well. It's fun to hear kind of a little bit of a homebody, but an Oklahoma bred, $1.2 million. So I did want to tip my cap a little bit to Welder. Also wanted to talk a little bit on the human side. Also, while I was at Equibase, I pulled up the seasonal stats from Remington as far as jockeys and trainers, jockey side of things, on top, David Cabrera. Stu Elliott, who, of course, familiar to folks from Smarty Jones fame, Richard Aramia, 1-2-3 there on the trainer side of things, Steve Asmussen, Carl Broberg, Scott Young, Gustafsson, and Flores, the top five there. But no shock, I guess, right around the corner from what is his home base, although it's hard to believe Steve Asmussen has a home base. We see him up here at Saratoga in the summer, and you see him at Churchill and whatnot. But I think Texas is technically the home base, so you guys at Remington are right around the corner. So no shock that Asmussen does very well there.
Yeah, he's just 3.5 hours down the road when he's at home at Arlington, Texas, which is almost never. But, He basically found his first success at Remington Park. He's won 17 training titles here now. His very first training title he ever won when he was much younger, well, we all were much younger, in the fall of the 91 season at Remington Park. And he basically raced here and had a few other places he would go over the course of the calendar year. He had a horse named Valid Expectations, which was a quality sprinter in the late mid to late 90s. And that horse raced at Remington Park as well, and then went on to win a graded sprint stakes somewhere up in Kentucky. I can't remember the race. But anyway, the horse kind of exploded for him, and that kind of got him a little bit of national recognition. And one thing led to another. Different owners came on and so forth. And, you know, it started to build over time. And next thing you know, he's running few hundred horses all at once at tracks all across America and racking up the wins that he did to eventually get that win record all time this summer up at Saratoga. So, yeah, he's an interesting story, and he is all over the place. It has a headquarters where he can kind of track everything when he's not at the races with one set. And it's a really interesting operation, what he's been able to do with it. But, yeah, 17 training titles now and picking up three more wins last night to finish up with 42.
17 training titles. That's incredible. And yeah, he picked up some wins, and we'll touch on that when we hit on the stakes action. And he and Brad Cox are having a nice little battle as far as the all-time money one situation here. Brad just went by Chad Brown's record, I think, yesterday, but Steve added to his total last night. That's going to be fun to see over the last, you know, week and a half or so here. But let's jump in. Let's take a little look at the stakes action from last night. We'll start with state bred stakes early on and get to the bigger ones later. You kind of mentioned what a big night it was for you handle-wise. How was it weather and crowd and whatnot?
Weather turned out to be fairly nice. We started out the evening at 63 degrees, so in December in Oklahoma, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It did cool off into the 40s by the time the card ended, but that's to be expected. But, you know, no rain, no precipitation, and really we started out the night, the official weather wind had us at 1 mile an hour out of the southwest. If you've ever been to Oklahoma, you know that almost never happens. It's Oklahoma, 10 miles an hour is considered a breeze, and 20 is considered it's a little tougher than normal, and it gets worse beyond that, and we tend to race. And we started on Wednesday night, as a matter of fact. The wind was at 25 miles an hour when we started the card on Wednesday night. Now, as it went on, it slowed down a bit, but that's just how it is in Oklahoma. The song was correct with the wind whipping down the plain. It happens all the time. But race eight, the Jim Thorpe Stakes, began the stakes run last night. Oklahoma Red.
We've got the stretch one run here. So we'll look at number seven, number one dude. You can talk over it. We don't have the audio, but number one dude is the winner. Just wanted to alert people that 2-5 easy winner. You know, looked pretty good coming in, having faced restricted breds and state breds. Ran second in the state bred stakes race last time. But boy, looked great last night, running away and hiding from this group.
Yeah, and he's might be the one to take over for Welder, become the next chance to be a millionaire for an Oklahoma bred. He's got to figure out how to pick up a couple of victories in open company, though. That's what helped Welder out to get to that mark. Last year, number one dude ran in the springboard, and turned out after the race they found a slight abscess in one of his feet, and they chalked that up to the reason he ran such a poor race, running eighth in a field of 10 last year. So he's had time and came back and started to pick up the victories, and yeah, he's just too strong in state company right now, especially in his age group of three. Now he gets to running his older horses starting next year, so we'll see how he handles that. But Terry Westmeyer, interesting story for the owner. His wife had told him no more horses, and he went to a sale anyway, so that you know, I'm sure that worked out well. So he picks up a broodmare who's in foal, and the broodmare was in foal with number one dude. So he comes home one night and tells his wife, well, I'm sorry, I bought another horse. And she goes, I thought we talked about this. And he goes, well, actually, I bought two because the one I bought is pregnant. Well, the one he got out of the broodmare was number one dude, and his wife seems to be fine with it for right now. So,
winning soothes all as bettors, handicappers, and as owners as well. I guess it all works out. State breds again in the You See It, $70,000 up for grabs going a mile. And again, it was a short price favorite in here. Number four, Sunday Flashback, gets it done. And this is a horse that had four wins and five career starts coming in. Four trainer C.R. Trout, a Midwestern fixture, and looked pretty good. You would think this one has a nice little future ahead as well.
Absolutely. She broke her maiden last fall here at Ramage Park that had time off. I talked to C.R. and he said that she kind of had an issue with shins, and he was okay giving her time off because she was still a little immature and just not really figuring things out. Well, the time off worked because she rattled off four more wins when she came back this fall. And CR does a great job with his young horses. And he's got a broodmare band out of his farm up here in Edmond, Oklahoma, that he keeps the solid females after their careers are done. And it has worked out wonders for him. So expect Sunday Flashback. She's only three. She's going to have a couple more good years of racing. And then look for her to be joining that broodmare band to try to keep cranking out nice horses, and he's had some solid ones over the years, doing a great job with his limited group of horses to have success at Remington Park. And he's also stretched out. He's won some a few graded races here and there over the course of the years in Kentucky and other places.
And I will say, being that color, this one, you know, with the number of wins and the color of fan favorite, certainly not helping the odds at all. 2-5 yesterday, 4-5 last time, 1-5, three starts back now. But again, you get a horse of that gray color, automatically going to attract some attention. Then they start winning. Doesn't hurt the owners and the trainer because they still get the purse money, but the odds for the bettors certainly take a little bit of a hit. But as I say, look good, and there's a nice future there. Kickoff $100,000 plus stakes action, race number 10, the She's All In. This one wasn't the favorite, second choice, but the aforementioned Steve Asmussen gets it done, and kicking off a really good night for the Jack we're certainly familiar with, Jose Ortiz, ships out there and, again, puts together a big night, starting out with Casual, a number six horse. Marion Francis was the 9-5 favorite and winds up second in here for Brad Cox, and it was a night of Brad Cox versus Steve Asmussen, and Asmussen gets it done with Casual in the She's All In.
Yeah, he picked up the edge over Brad Cox last night for sure in a couple of races, so it doesn't always go that way because the two just duke it out over and over. But, yeah, Casual, her first stakes win, which is somewhat hard to believe. And last year she ran in the She's All In as a three-year-old, finishing fourth. She made a bid in the stretch last year and just couldn't finish up. She's knocked on the door for Black Type throughout the course of this year, running second in many races. And she finally figured it out last night. Jose Ortiz comes in to ride. She had a nice race at Zia Park in New Mexico on their feature stakes day in late November, with a rod of Ortiz up on that one, finishing second in a stakes race out there. Jose got the call now with Harada taking some time off. But, yeah, Casual first stakes win. Asmussen and company get it done. And you mentioned Ortiz. He didn't come in just to take in the scenery and have something nice to eat. He came in for business, and it worked out for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll turn the page and see more of that in the trapeze. This one for the two-year-old fillies going a mile, and the trapeze will be won by number 12, Optionality. Again, Steve Asmussen and Jose Ortiz. Golden Sights, the number one, second. Hits Pricey Legacy, third. And again, it was Asmussen over Brad Cox with the second favorite over the favorite in here. And again, just a runaway victory for Optionality.
Well, and chalk it up to the ride for Jose Ortiz. They were on the outside. There were three scratches in this race, so it was down to a nine-horse field. But the mile at Remington, our start-finish line at the mile for one-mile oval, it's not exactly right on top of the clubhouse turn, but it's still close enough. You have to make a decision and figure out what you're going to do before you get to it. And Ortiz decided, well, this filly has speed. We're going to go ahead and let her go. And he got position, was able to clear enough of the field to not get hung out too wide in that first turn. And then just tracked right off the hip of Hits Pricey Legacy, let her set the pace out of the CR Trout Barn. And by the time they reached the end of the backstretch and started to move into the turn, Ortiz shook Optionality up. She responded, had the lead before they reached the quarter-mile mark, and then goes on to the victory. So Optionality, a nice ride by Ortiz to get Asmussen another stakes win last night. And watch her. She was so impressive. I mean, I've got to think, again, Gunrunner right now, everything Gunrunner has anything to do with right now seems to be winning. I have to think Optionality is going to be one we might see in the Kentucky Oaks in just a few months. If she shows improvement like she has over her last three races, look out.
Yeah, unlike most of the Gunrunners this year, it took her a while to get going. But, yeah, wins the Zia Princess and then stretches out last night and wins the Trapeze. And it's Asmussen and Winchell. So you would think there could be bigger and better things. And as I was looking at the PPs here, I just noticed Morning Twilight goes out for our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds. They're, of course, Saratoga-based, and we have Terry Finley and Tommy Bellhouse on with us all the time. And it's an Oklahoma bred that's been racing against state breds out there. I got to find out if that's a new game plan for them to have some of those Remington Park-based horses.
Yeah, bred in Sayre, Oklahoma by Joe Merrick, who's the son of famous horseman Walter Merrick, who had great success over the years in the court horse business, winning the All-American Futurity a few times. $300,000 purchase for Morning Twilight. She showed up this fall, and we were like, wow, okay. And we saw that, and she was all out to get her first maiden win. And then she rattled off a nice stakes bred race, Oklahoma bred race on Classics night. Watch out for her. She may have some talent. She's still starting to figure things out. But, yeah, interesting purchase for an Oklahoma bred, probably one of the most richest Oklahoma bred purchases ever, I would have to think.
Yeah, she
wound up, look that up. We'll talk to some sales experts and see what they find out.
Yeah, she wound up sixth last night, but the first three starts of the career seem to indicate there could be some promise. And she's an Asmussen trainee as well for up West Point. All right, let's go to, as I say, the exclamation point on the evening and the exclamation point on the Remington Park season. And as I noted, I think this is, for the last few years, been a really fun addition to the two-year-old late season stakes scene. $400,000 up for grabs last night. The two-year-old's going a mile. Asmussen has won this, I want to say, three out of the last seven, and two out of the last three before last night. And last night it was Safi Joseph brings a horse up from Gulfstream to get it done. Asmussen winds up third and fourth in here, but Make It Big wins the number two horse, Osborne second, Concept third, but it's Safi Joseph and Jose Ortiz, who just, what a phenomenal night for Ortiz out there. But Make It Big, three starts now, three wins.
And did it last night at Open Company, won in Florida bred competition, the first two down at Gulfstream Park. Yeah, so connection strong there once again. It picks up 10 Kentucky Derby qualifying points for 2020 because Oklahoma is still a state that allows Lasix for two-year-olds, but in the springboard, because it's a Kentucky Derby qualifying possibility race, if you go without the Lasix and finish in the top four, you get the qualifying points. So Make It Big picked up 10, and Osborne picked up four for running second. So it's still very early. The points aren't huge yet, but it, you know, gives them a base to try and build off of. But Make It Big, very game effort last night. Coming in, Safi Joseph sending in Sarah Schaefer, his assistant working out of Fairgrounds, came over to handle things this week with that one. So it was a fun race, a game race. Osborne, Ron Moquette trains this one. He must think something about Osborne because he came in and handled the horse himself last night in the paddock walking ring. He was the one leading the horse around. It wasn't an assistant or a groom. It was Ron Moquette, the trainer. So he came over from Oakland last night to handle business for Osborne, and a very game effort for that one and Make It Big. They duked it out for the distance of the stretch. A fun race, and Make It Big prevailed there at the end with Ortiz.
Yeah, both of those are worth watching going forward, and Osborne coming out of a win at Churchill, and I always say that late fall Churchill meet, the two-year-old races are really salty, and so it comes out of a win there. That was a nice gutsy performance on the inside last night to run second for Osborne. Make It Big also with the win. They're worth watching. Dale, before we let you go, as we've been talking, we're putting up, when you talk, a little picture of you with the binoculars, and over the years have had a lot of announcers on with me up at Saratoga. We talk often with the NYRA announcers. I've had Tom Durkin on a number of times, and Larry Colmus and John Embriel and various other announcers over the years as well. So I just have to ask, because sometimes there's a story, sometimes they're not, but I'm wondering, what's the booth like at Remington? You get a good view there? Any obstacles, any stories about the Remington booth?
No, it's a nice booth. It's one of those that juts out a little bit, so you can see with the angles. You know, it's not like I've seen some tracks where there's an open window and the announcer has to lean out, risk back injury to see parts of the racetrack. So don't have that problem. We have a nice angled booth and heavy thick glass. I wish it opened up, because when the weather is nice, it'd be nice to have fresh air and things like that. But, you know, on other times it's probably best that it's closed. But it works out well. The sight lines are fine. There's no hindrance whatsoever. And Remington's been around long enough now. Some of the trees in the infield are starting to get a little bit too big and tall, so they block the turf course a little bit here and there. But other than that, there's no problem with the view from Remington Park as far as the announce booth. And we're up high enough, too. I think it's almost 80 to 100 feet up. It's up high enough where you can see plenty.
And I have to ask you, is there a big difference? I assume there is, but maybe if you do it enough, it's not as noticeable. But is there a big difference, thoroughbreds and quarter horses?
The difference as an announcer for me, I had to learn, was to slow down when thoroughbred season got here. Because quarter horses, it's all out for 18 to 22 seconds. And I always try to work in as many horses as I can over the course of that run. So you become more like an auctioneer in the quarter horse race to try to get rolling and get more names out and call the action. And it took me a while to learn. Once we got to thoroughbred season, it always took me a few days to decompress, I guess, to slow down a little bit. and let the race come to me because you had more time. But that's the main difference for the announcing part of it. It's all straight at you on the court horses for the most part. So you're looking one way 95% of the time instead of going around the track. You don't have to worry about that. I like both. I've gotten used to both of them. I've been around both of them now for so many years that it's just become second nature to me. So I enjoy both of them very well.
What's the game plan now for you with the end of the Remington season? Little vacation time?
Yes, we have this thing called PTO that we have to burn or lose it. So I've got plenty of that I have to work on here. I'll be back in the office for a couple of days next week, and then I'll take about a week and a half or so off, and then start working towards the quarter horse season in 2022. Remington, you know, we are fortunate enough, we do have a casino to help fund race purses. That came in 2005 and saved not only Remington Park, but also the racing industry in the state of Oklahoma. So that's always open, and simulcast racing is year round. So we have plenty of things going on to work forward towards live racing going on in 2022. But, you know, thanks again for the support last night. It was a big night, and look out for some of these horses. Make It Big and Osborne look like they have a bright futures from that springboard. I'm still interested in Bye Bye Bobby, my top pick last night. Had a horrible start, and his jockey didn't do him any favors, I don't think. He came from off the pace to win his stakes race in Zia Park in November. Romy Chirinos hustled him up to join the fray, not only get to join the fray, but go up to the lead early in the backstretch. And I thought, well, what's going on here? And sure enough, Bye Bye Bobby gave out in the middle of the final turn. So I think Bye Bye Bobby's one to still look at down the road. $870,000 purchase. So there's some folks that think something is there with Bye Bye Bobby. I just think he had a bad trip last night.
And for folks who don't pay attention, Todd Fincher is a pretty good trainer down in the Southwest and the Midwest area and whatnot. And the nice thing for you with the performance last night, it helped your odds next time.
Absolutely.
Dale, we really appreciate the visit and the conversation. Again, it was fun for us last night. With the state laws here in New York, sometimes we can take nighttime and sometimes we can't. But with the big program at Remington last night, we definitely plugged that in, and I think folks had a lot of fun. We were kind of touting during the day yesterday, last night's Springboard Mile. And as I've said and as you alluded to, it's a nice two-year-old late-season race. But this year in particular, I think those two will be worth watching going forward. So, again, appreciate the conversation. We'll talk again in the future.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Dale Day from Remington Park, and put the capper on their season last night with the nice stakes card highlighted by the Springboard Mile. All right, I'm going to wrap things up because we kick off Gulfstream today. I think there are noon post, Aqueduct 1220. I'll also be taking a look at some Oaklawn today, which will go a little bit later in the afternoon, but OTB Live with the start at Gulfstream. We'll be back in about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. Should be fun. Nice stakes action down at Gulfstream. Again, we have those two rich sire stakes races in New York. Going to root for our friend Roddy Valente and Bustin Pietra. Don't forget, it's a fan appreciation day. First 75 folks through the door here at the Racebook get a $2 win bet on Bustin Pietra in the Stallion Series. 8-1 on the morning. I'm going to be interested to see what he goes off at because, again, to me, he's the best proven dirt form of the group. So we'll see how it shakes out. But don't forget also there is the Play the Board handicapping contest here today at the Racebook. We'd love to have you come down and join us. Have some fun this afternoon. Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Thanks again to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB during the championship meet. We appreciate their support. I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America for a Saturday morning. Hopefully we gave you some good ideas for this afternoon over the past couple of hours and gave you some thoughts also in recap as far as Remington. As I say, be back in about an hour or so with OTV Live for a Saturday afternoon. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.